Hi, and welcome back to the Leading Language and Literature Podcast with me, Chris Jordan. In this episode, I'm talking to Professor Nutter Kobakidze. Nutter is a director at the Comparative Education Research Centre and assistant professor at Hong Kong University. Her areas of expertise include comparative education, privatisation of education, globalisation and education, and large-scale international assessments. I wanted to speak to Nutter particularly in regard to the privatisation of education and more specifically, private tutoring. Having read an interview with the professor in Youth Hong Kong, a quarterly magazine published by the Hong Kong Federation of Youth Groups, I was instantly struck by how much academia and research there was around so-called shadow education that largely goes undiscussed in the day-to-day practice of classroom teachers. We discuss why the term shadow education is used in academia and what services it covers, how or why shadow education benefits from Hong Kong's education system, whether there is a consensus on why students get tutoring in secondary schools, what students are missing out on during an evening filled with tutoring, why it is so difficult to gain a consensus on whether private tutoring contributes to students' academic achievement, how schools, students, and parents can work together to better understand the need or not for a private tutor, and finally, the ways AI technology might impact the shadow education industry in the future. Thanks so much to Professor Kobakidze on her research and advocacy for better understanding around private tutoring and the impact it has on young people and their families, as well as offering up her time to talk to me for the podcast today. If you want to be kept up to date on when educational chat like this happens, then be sure to subscribe to the podcast and or follow me on Twitter at ChrisJordanHK. Okay, Nutter. Most English-speaking countries refer to shadow education as private tutoring. Why is this term, shadow education, used in academia, and what services does it cover?
Thank you for the question, Chris, and thank you for having me today in this podcast. The shadow education is a metaphor which is widely used in academia since late 90s. It's called shadow education because it operates outside the formal education system or mainstream education in the shadow of the schooling. So tutoring often mimics curriculum of mainstream school. However, it is not always the case. So sometimes tutoring covers curriculum or material which is outside what is taught at school. So sometimes it extends to what is taught in school, sometimes it elaborates, so not always mimics. But this metaphor became very popular, especially in academic literature. However, in reality, in everyday life, students, teachers, and families may not use this term. So in the past, shadow education was primarily considered as East Asian phenomenon, but we see that it is becoming a global phenomenon. Actually, at the Comparative Education Research Center at the Faculty of Education at the University of Hong Kong, we study shadow education or private tutoring from an international perspective. We study not only Hong Kong and Asian countries, but we look at European countries, collaborate with our colleagues, and we publish books on shadow education in Hong Kong, in Asia, recently published shadow education in Africa, European countries. And so we do research, comparative and international research on shadow education across the globe.
Obviously, one of those places that you just mentioned is Hong Kong, which is where we are now. The education system in Hong Kong is obviously undoubtedly like a neoliberal industry. Basically, there's obviously lots of international schools. And depending on if you've got the money and if you are willing to pay the fees, and if your son or daughter can get into the school, it's basically, there's a lot of freedom in some senses for parents to come and go as they please in the different schools. How or why does shadow education benefit from the idea that education in Hong Kong is a neoliberal industry?
Hong Kong has a well-known and long-standing history shadow education. It's a very popular service across different types of, secondary school, primary school, high school, private, public. It's very, very popular. It has been very popular for a long time. In Hong Kong, we have very different, distinctive form of shadow education. For example, large tutorial companies have so-called star tutors who are often featured on billboards, MTR, trams, buses. We also have some small companies or individual tutors offering tutoring to students. So according to the latest statistics, this is from 2023, collected by Hong Kong Federation of Youth Groups, found that 96.7% of primary and secondary school students received tutoring at some point in their lives, with 72% still attending tutorial classes now. So as you see, it's quite a large scale of tutoring in Hong Kong. So most of the tutors in Hong Kong target secondary school students who are getting ready for the end of school examinations or university entrance examination. So such tutoring for exams focus on, you know, analysis of question types or understanding of marking schemes for exams. But tutoring in Hong Kong is not only for saying it, also popular in lower levels such as schools and even kindergartens. So if you ask me about the root causes of tutoring, this could be different causes, including what we mean exams, high stakes testing, and pressure. Sometimes scholars say it is also linked to culture, the Confucius culture. Hong Kong has a sort of strong emphasis, cultural emphasis on diligence, respect for learning, elitism, social competition. All these are quite popular in Hong Kong. So what I'm saying is that culture do shape the extent to which families are open to invest in shadow education. It could be, you mentioned neoliberal policies, right? It could be also government policies or no policies regulating this industry. In Hong Kong, what we have is so-called laissez-faire approach to tutoring, which means basically no control. So there is a control, there is some regulations in terms of, you know, technical standards and regulations like building and safety for tutorial companies, but not really content regulation and regulation on hours. So it is laissez-faire. So these policies have allowed shadow education businesses to flourish in Hong Kong. And we see that education in Hong Kong is increasingly viewed as commodity and also as an instrument to achieve, you know, educational goals and also career goals. So we have quite strong competition in Hong Kong, and there is a lot of anxieties among parents about education, and then the market benefits from these anxieties of students and parents. What bothers me as a scholar, though, is tutoring for young students, for young children, which is a cause of concern for me. Just recently, a few years ago, I did this together with my colleagues at the University of Hong Kong, looking at tutoring at the kindergarten level. So there is a tutoring for kindergarten admissions. So some young children in Hong Kong get tutoring in order to better perform at admission interviews for kindergarten. And we're talking about 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds. They barely speak, and sometimes this could be really stressful for them.
I have young children myself, and haven't spoke to like other parents who aren't lucky enough to have, you know, a connection with a school. They have to go through that process of interviewing and things like that. And some of them have, yeah, exactly mentioned that idea of going to a tutor or a prep class to get ready for these interviews, which is
like baffling, really. It's crazy that the standard or the kind of the expectation of the students is so high at such a young age. I've never heard that statistic before. 97% of students at some point have received tutoring. I suppose it makes sense. It's crazy. But according to research, is there consensus on why students get tutoring in secondary education? You've obviously mentioned assessments and anxiety around scores. I mean, my experience as classroom teacher and as a tutor myself in the past, there's different reasons, and I'm not always confident that the reason I'm being told is the true reason, but in my experience, sometimes it's they get so much homework and they really need help to do the homework, and at secondary level the parents can no longer help them. It can be failing grades, it can be lack of faith in the teacher, it can be lack of faith in the school in general, but they don't want to change schools. Is there any kind of consensus in the research about why students get tutoring?
I think you named most of the reasons why students seek tutoring. There are a lot of reasons. There is no one reason. Of course, perhaps the major reason is to improve academic achievement. Mm. But what we found at the University of Hong Kong is that not only weaker students go for tutoring, but quite strong students who are already very strong academically. So tutoring is an instrument to get ahead of others in this fierce competition of schooling that we have in Hong Kong. Of course, grades, of course, help with homework, especially at the secondary level. Parents are no longer able to help students, so there is a need for tutor. And you mentioned also, quite interestingly, lack of faith in the teacher.
Mm.
And this is interesting because sometimes this lack of faith is perceived, not real. Mm. So I think we need to trust teachers more. Sometimes, for example, some tutors, and there is evidence of that in Hong Kong, openly disregard teachers in mainstream schools and mention they are old-fashioned, they don't have skills to help students get prepared for exams, etc., etc. So there is a competition between tutors and teachers in schools, and which also perpetuates this lack of faith in teachers, mm. which, as I said, I think it's often perceived.
It's hard. I sort of often like overhear conversations with the students or amongst the students when we're in a kind of pastoral situation, and they'll be talking about teachers and giving their critique of them. And we kind of try and have a conversation, a productive conversation about like what makes a good teacher. Like if you're criticizing them, you know, how what are the pros and the cons? What are this and that? And I think it's that kind of Dunning-Kruger effect of, you don't know how much you know. You don't know what, like, how can I say this better? You can never perceive how little you know about a given subject until you learn more about it. That kind of paradox of, you know, you might have been in secondary schooling for 3 years, but realistically, if you've been in like the kind of the school or the education system for 30 years, then you're obviously going to know more, but as a novice, as a student, you don't know what you don't know. You're not aware of the things that you can't see happening behind the teacher's preparations and things like that. So I completely agree. We need to, in England, we sort of say like, you need to love the one you're with a little bit more and make the mm-hmm. most of the opportunity that you've got with that particular practitioner. But coming back to the article that I read that you kind of contributed to, you mentioned that people need to remember that academics is not the sole predictor of academic success, and that by chasing what might be unsustainable grade improvements, what are students missing out on during an evening of two, three, four tutoring classes?
Thanks. This is also a good question, Chris. Well, there is a lot of research that while academic excellence is important, students' future success is also very much influenced by their social and emotional skills, character traits, and life skills. So I think we need to prioritize both academic achievement and overall well-being. So if we do so, we can then support students in reaching out their full potential. So in other words, academic success should not come at the expense of physical, mental, and emotional health, which you sometimes see in schools in Hong Kong. Students go to tutorial classes after schools. Sometimes they don't have time to really unstress, relax, eat good food, and they go home, do homework. And sometimes they even have double homework from tutors and from school. So this is extra burden. So when we talk about shadow education and private tutoring, like sometimes we forget these aspects or potential negative aspects on students' mental health and well-being. So such heavy workload that students may face, or double workload or double homework from tutors and teachers, may contribute to health issues and even lead to burnout, right? So this pressure to perform well can also lead to increased stress level, so which is not good overall. And I also want to mention families and parents. I recently did a study on parents in Hong Kong, and parents and how and why they invest in shadow education. It's published in academic journals and some papers are in the pipeline. Mm-hmm. Basically, what I noticed, Chris, is that parents are also experience high levels of stress, because private tutoring comes with high costs, right? And it can be financial strain of not being able to afford it. So back to what you asked about what are students missing out when they go to tutoring. Perhaps they're missing out a good play with friends, just having fun, relationship with parents, extracurricular activities, sports, or just being in nature. So tutoring, and especially excessive tutoring, right? We are talking about excessive tutoring here. So limits their time for play, having fun, relationship building with their parents, peers, and with the nation.
And I think the tragedy is, or one of the tragedies is that, you know, if a parent or a student said, yeah, okay, but I want to get a 45 in IB, I want 10 A stars, and I'm going to throw all my money at it, I'm going to throw all my time at it, my mental health or eating nice food or sports can wait until I'm in university. The tragedy is that, like, again, according to the article I read of yours, you can't actually prove that private tutoring contributes significantly to students' academic achievements. So you could be spending thousands of Hong Kong dollars, but at the moment, why is it so difficult to gain a consensus on whether private tutoring contributes to students' academic achievement or not?
Well, this is actually proven by studies, quantitative studies, qualitative studies in and outside of Hong Kong, that basically effectiveness of tutoring depends on various factors, not only so basically going to tutoring doesn't mean that it is effective and it's working, because it depends on a variety of factors. And the motivation of students is really important. It depends on the motivations of students. It also depends on the quality of tutoring, right? It's qualification, professionalism of tutor, not just any tutor, but, you know, parents need to carefully choose tutors. But even if they choose the best tutor, if student is not motivated, it's not going to work in the end. Mm. May be beneficial for some students and may not make significant difference for others. And again, this is not anecdotal evidence, but this is proven by studies in shadow education.
How can school students and parents work together then to better understand the need or not for a private tutor? Because I worked in a school previously and they came out quite militantly and said, listen, our school is so good that you do not need to be getting a private tutor, which to me seemed a bit naive, because I think, you, like you said, 97% of students across Hong Kong are getting it. So it doesn't seem to be specific to any one school. Like, no one school should take it personally if lots of students have tutors. But it seems to be like quite an unspoken topic. Like, schools, mm-hmm. students, parents, they don't really speak to one another about whether or not and how much tutoring is happening. Obviously, the parent and the student will speak to each other, but the parent and the student may not relate this to the school. So how can they work together better to understand the need or not for a private tutor?
I think this comes down to partnership between teachers and parents. Mm. I think parents need to communicate with teachers and understand the need for tutoring, right? And parents are also very much influenced by each other. It's like a peer effect among parents. And sometimes they just send their kids to tutoring when there is no need, right? So I think parents also need to resist this peer pressure and find out whether children really need tutoring. Sometimes it's like a fashion, you know, everyone goes to tutoring, so they also send their kids to tutoring. At HKU, I teach undergraduate students, the University of Hong Kong, and it's one of the most prestigious universities in Hong Kong, in Asia, and globally. And we have some very brilliant students who came from Hong Kong schools, and some never had tutoring, which surprises me because majority of them had tutoring. And sometimes I wonder whether they really need it. You know, as I said, student motivation is really important. The situation you describe about schools, I think also school administration need to understand why majority of students go for tutoring. What are the reasons, right? Except the reason that they cannot control. What are the school level factors that contribute for the need for tutoring and address them more critically? I think the communication between parents, you know, teachers, and school administration to better understand the situation and, not be silent, but have open discussion about the issues and how to better students. I mean, I know some schools in Hong Kong have school-based tutoring services, both private schools, international schools, but the paradox is even when school doing services to students, sometimes students still want to go outside and receive tutoring from outside tutors. But that is also back to, you know, mentality and mindset of parents and students. Sometimes services offered by the school is not really perceived as high quality as from very expensive outside tutors. Mm. We also need a lot of education on that.
Mm. I think, for what it's worth, like I've sort of seen both sides of the situation. And if you start to have a conversation about tutoring and tutoring is happening, there might be a fear, from a parenting side, maybe there's a fear that if you admit to the teacher the student, your son or daughter has a tutor, it's almost like a value judgment on the teacher, like you're not working hard enough, therefore we've hired a tutor, which of course is not the case. But in the rare situations where parents have told me, like I might have a student in my English class in year 10 or something, and his mother or father says, okay, well, we got him a tutor a year ago. What have you seen any improvement? That is really good data for me, because then I can sort of say, okay, well, irrespective of the improvement thing, I wouldn't really weigh in on that. I would say, he's improved in this way and that. But in terms of what the tutor's doing with them, I can then sort of suggest to the parents, these are the sort of materials we're working with. This is the sort of direction they might want to go in. This, that, and the other. It's like it's typically very difficult as a tutor, like I've been a tutor before, to know exactly what the curriculum of the school is. You're most of the time you're going off what the student tells you, and they're not always the best or most reliable source for that. But if there is an open conversation between, as you say, the parents and the administration and or the teachers, you could probably reassure them that maybe they don't need a tutor in the first place and their time is better spent in other ways. Or B, if they are a student who has significant needs in the subject, like if they're new to the country, for example, and they're the medium of instruction, they're trying to catch up, that's a valid reason to have a tutor maybe, but you can then kind of fill them in regard to what's in the curriculum, because they could be practicing something with them that is useful but not applicable. And that brings with it its own kind of issues with motivation and things like that. So it is bizarre that I've only worked in a handful of schools in Hong Kong, but it's never been part of the conversation. It's never been like an open, everyone knows it's happening, I suppose, hence this kind of shadow education name.
Like an open secret, right?
Yes.
So I think parents end up blaming teachers culture or something. I think we should just avoid such conversation and just think about what's best for the students. And in Hong Kong schools, especially in public schools where class size is larger than in the international schools, not in every, of course, but in general, teachers sometimes face difficulties in giving attention to all the students, right? And in this case, some students may naturally have a need for tutoring to have more individualized attention, right? Students with special needs, students with some learning difficulties, and tutoring can be really, really good in these cases. And it should not be perceived that if student is taken tutoring, that means teacher is not doing his or her job, because teachers are very busy people, one of the busiest people, especially in Hong Kong. They do lots of work beside teaching, right? So, and they may not have capacity to give attention, full attention to everyone. I think we need to understand teachers as well. And if there is a need for tutoring, and not just tutoring because everyone goes there, because we don't believe in teachers and their professionals, I think we should avoid this kind of situation in judgment, right? And we need to look at it as a partnership between all parties for the best future of our children.
Yeah, agree. The last question I have for you, Nutter, is in the last, what has it been, 12 months, 18 months, maybe less than that, we've obviously had this massive bombshell in terms of the rapid acceleration of AI technology. And when it first arrived, and I think still to this day, a lot of students talk about using it for really basic homework tasks or kind of structuring, you know, complex texts that they've got ideas for, but they don't know how to order it and blah, 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 blah. But that speaks to me that like maybe AI is starting to impinge on services or things that like a tutor would typically provide. So in your experience or in your opinion, like how has AI impacted the shadow education industry, and what are your predictions about how it will do so in the future?
I think currently we all see that it increasingly enters the education system, including tutoring business, and tries to transform the learning process. Tutoring businesses have been using AI in variety of ways, in China, in India, in Hong Kong as well, in other parts of Asia. This use of AI in tutoring included integration of chatbots into their platforms, assisting students through message apps, mobile apps. So I think this kind of feedback from AI has been used for a long time before ChatGPT and other generative AI came into the education sector. So it, in other ways, AI can be complementary to tutoring, right? It can help tutoring industry by offering some useful tools. But it also can compete with tutoring businesses. AI has the potential to disrupt the tutoring business. And some companies, if you look at news headlines, some companies actually have concerns that the popularity of ChatGPT and other AI platforms actually hurting their business and their development. So it definitely affected education system, including tutoring, but we aren't sure what impact it will have in coming months, right? In which direction and magnitude of this impact will have in the near future. And also research on this AI tutoring, the learners is just now taking place. So it's hard to really anticipate will be in the future, but I will definitely watch this trend because this is one of the sort of strongest factor affecting education system at the moment.
Yeah, it's very interesting to see how it will proceed. Okay, well, the only thing that remains for me to say, Nutsris, thank you very much for giving up your time today to talk about this topic, which I think, as we've kind of said already and repeated many times, it's, you know, very, very common. Everyone knows about it. Everyone goes home to England or the USA and Australia and tells their family and their friends about, you know, the celebrity tutors and how many tutors their students have and this kind of thing, if they're international teachers. But similarly, like if you've lived in Hong Kong a long time, you can hear mums and dads talking about it all the time, like amongst local families, in terms of, as you said before, the financial constraints and the almost like the kind of the arms race that opens up when one parent gets a tutor for their child, then it's everyone in that friend group, etc., etc. And I think it's a topic that really needs more discussion amongst, as you said, administrators, departments, parents and children, and it weighs quite heavily on the well-being of lots of different stakeholders. So thank you very much for sharing your expertise with the academic world, but more specifically, thank you very much for sharing it with me today.
Thank you very much, Chris, and thank you for giving attention to this important topic in Hong Kong.